Hello and welcome back to the Edge of the Box podcast, a podcast by WhoScored.com in association with Ultimate Fan. If you want to find out more about them, then the link is in the description. I'm Dan Bardell, your host today, joined by George Ellick and Sam Tye to discuss the weekend's Premier League action. So we'll look at all the games as we normally do, including predictions, but we're going to focus mainly on Manchester City against Arsenal, Aston Villa against Wolves, and then, of course, there'll be some Manchester United shot bingo as well. Apologies for my voice. I seem to have the plague, so I mean, my voice is already quite deep, so this is, I don't know how this is going to go down. I felt like I had no voice at all this morning when I woke up. But apart from that, apart from me, George, you okay?
Mate, I'm healthy as anything.
I'm always ill as well. So I've
always ill, and you two are both ill, and I feel there's nothing more annoying, and I would know this, than being ill and hearing other people saying they feel great. But I feel great.
I think you deserve it, George. It's been a while. So.
Thank you. Yeah, it's true.
I'm okay with you feeling all right for once.
We all know that whether it's next week or the week after, there will be a time soon where I'll log in to this chat and I'll be like, I'm ill.
Yeah, I mean, so. I was going to say, I'm ill, but I'm still here in the trenches. A few times George has been ill and, you know, he's pulled out last minute, you know. So if you're in a relegation dogfight, would you want George on the pitch is the question I'm going to ask you, sir.
I've also done it a couple of times when I've been way too ill to do it as well. Barely able to speak.
Oh, geez, yeah.
George in the trenches, sir?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Since I've been podcasting with him, you know, since August, I've noticed that when the going gets tough, he zips out.
Yeah, got a soft centre.
But I mean, to be fair, if he doesn't...
It's a bit like Villa, to be honest, isn't it?
No, we won't have any of that kind of chat today. In fairness to George, if he doesn't do it, you know, I presume he doesn't get paid, so he's only hurting himself by not getting in the trenches with us.
Hold on, do you guys get paid for this?
big time bunts in this household for doing this show. Right then, let's look at the weekend. Let's look at Manchester City against Arsenal. Huge game on Sunday, George. All the talk really about England is around Foden or Saka. I think it will be both. Who has impressed you the most this season?
It's hard to say, I think. They're two incredible talents. And I think there are massive similarities in how they impact games. Not necessarily in their kind of style of play necessarily, but they're both players who have thrived this season playing on the right-hand side, two left-footed players, two players who both score goals, albeit kind of slightly different kinds of goals, very much in the modern wide player formula where, although certainly Foden is a very good ball carrier, that they're dribbling and the amount that they dribble isn't really necessarily a huge part of their game. And you're right. I assume when we get to the Euros, it's going to be Foden on the left, Saka on the right, and Kane through the middle, which I think it's a bit of a shame. And we've seen, as in, I would do that too. I'm not saying it's not what we should do, but I think when you look at Phil Foden's England career so far, especially in major tournaments, the presence of Bukayo Saka preventing him from playing off the right-hand side has probably somewhat curtailed his impact a little bit, because that's where he's best and that's where he's had such a great season this season for Manchester City. In terms of who's impressed me more, I think it's very easy to get complacent with what Bukayo Saka's doing. Like, he is incredible and he is so consistent where his levels rarely ever drop. Whereas with Foden, it does feel like he has these periods of form, probably just coming out at the back of one at the moment, where he is maybe the best player in the league and he looks sensational. He's City's best player and then maybe goes quiet for a while. And that is kind of symptomatic of how we see a lot of Manchester City's players generally performing, kind of having these spells where they're so good and then spells where they're not quite as strong. So in that sense, I think, you know, if Gareth Southgate was to look at the England team and say, you know what, I actually want to play a genuine left-sided player, like I want to play a Rashford, I want to play a Grealish, on that side, then I think there's no question in my mind that Saka would be the one who would play off the right. But I think it is likely to be both of them.
Yeah, yeah, I think George nailed on the head there with the consistency of Saka. And I just think we fall into a trap sometimes when we're talking about football, because we're always looking for new things to talk about. We're always looking for that kind of shiny new thing. And Foden this season is having his best ever season. He's made the most ever starts in a season, played the most ever minutes. He's going to go for 30-plus goal contributions here in all competitions, goals and assists. He's already on something like 25. He's going to hit 30-plus. It's a hell of a season production-wise. He has never done anything like this. He's never been this important to Manchester City. He's never stepped up and scored this many decisive goals. And so it's new. And so we're talking about it because it's exciting. And then there is that, obviously, that danger then that you let Bukayo Saka's incredibly consistent churn sort of fade away into the background a little bit. And maybe you don't appreciate it as much. So, you know, picking between the two is almost impossible. And I also agree that I don't think Gareth Southgate is going to have to pick between the two. I think with Rashford not having the best season and Grealish in danger of having the season passing by due to injuries, the easy fix here is just to chuck Foden on the left, where, okay, he hasn't played that much football this season, but I remember a spell when he took over from Leroy Sané at left wing. Okay, yeah, it was 2 to 3 years ago. He was phenomenal on the left.
Yeah, he was very good.
We have evidence that he is a brilliant left winger as well as the other positions.
I always go back to that France game, the quarterfinals of the World Cup in Qatar. Really huge, huge game. Saka was unbelievable that night. I don't think it's talked about enough how good he was in that game. And as soon as he went off, I felt that was when England lost a little bit of momentum, actually.
Yep.
I've got a thought with Foden and England. I think Saka has to play on the right. I love both players. I think they're both better on the right. But I think Saka, international tournament, I think he has to play on the right. So that does mean that you have to put Foden in on the left. I've said this in a few other places. Left-back's a problem for England here because I thought Chilwell wasn't great across the two games. You can't rely on him to be fit. Not sure Luke Shaw's going to be fit. So that means we're probably going to have an unorthodox left-back playing left-back, whether it be Trippier, whether it be Colwell, Gomez. Yep. There's going to be an unorthodox left-back there who isn't going to stay wide and provide the width from the left-hand side. I think that affects Foden's selection on the left. I think that plays more into the fact of that you maybe would need a Rashford, a Gordon, a Grealish, because you need someone who's going to hold width on the left-hand side. So I think that might actually end up being a problem for Foden if Luke Shaw's not fit.
Mm. Yeah, or if Chilwell can't pick up the form. Chilwell is currently, fit, but like, I mean, I didn't watch the second game.
So look it.
But the first game, he was really bad. Yeah, I hope he got better in the second game, but I was watching Wales. But he's not had a good season, has he, Chilwell, at all? No. And I'm praying that he picks it up, or Luke Shaw comes back with four games to go, because we need a solution there. You're right, and it is gonna have a knock-on effect. Trippier inverted,
that's what it'll be, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be, I remember Ashley Young at the World Cup, you know, and I caught spent the whole tournament going, we need a left footer on the left, and you know, didn't have anyone. So
no, I tell you what, we've got the head to head, like the comparison of Foden and Saka here across the season. Both their numbers are absolutely incredible. Saka comes ahead in four metrics, Foden ahead in three. One metric here that's actually surprised me: key passes per 90. Foden's at 2.2, George. Saka's at 2.7. I've got to be completely honest. I've watched a lot of Arsenal, watched a lot of Saka. His passing isn't really something that I've noticed as being a key facet of his game, but it is something that I've noticed with Foden. So I think even I'm saying how highly I rate Saka, obviously he's even better than I think he is, because that key passes per 90 number, that shocked me that he's ahead of Foden.
Yeah, I mean, key passes is one of those interesting but quite binary metrics where it's basically just a chance created, isn't it? So it doesn't measure the quality of that chance. And what I would say is that in terms of the type of players that they are, Foden is much more likely to basically drift inside into positions where he's likely to play the more intricate passes that might lead to a shot, which are probably going to be higher XG chances, but not necessarily as common. Whereas Saka is probably more likely to bring the ball onto his left foot from wide and deliver crosses into the box, which might create more common or more plentiful chances. So I think you'd have to dig down a little bit there to actually understand whether or not that is a sign of Saka's creative prowess. I think it might be more a mechanism of the way that they play.
I try and get involved with you stats nerds, and then I come up with something and you just shoot me down, George.
I'm having a look at it now.
I won't get involved again.
Saka is fifth for expected assists per 90, 0.28. Foden 0.2, so it stacks up there as well.
You got everyone in the Premier League there?
I do.
Total expected assists for Bukayo Saka 9.2. He's top of the league.
Oh, he's top.
Yeah. He's top of the league.
So it depends per 90 how you. Because he plays loads of minutes. So Doku's top per 90. That's because he comes on for the last half an hour of games against
But Foden and Saka have both played 25 90s, roughly. They are pretty much bang on. So you can use the totals. And Saka and Saka comes out on top. He does. He's top of the league. I mean, he's ahead of Martin Odegaard. So, I mean, I wouldn't expect that either.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I know Saka takes penalties. But 13 goals across 27 games. Foden's 11 in 28 for those that are listening via audio. Been told that we've both got to pick one each. So Samtai FC, George Ellick FC and Dunbardell FC. You can only pick one.
For what?
I don't know. This is just a question. So, it just says if you had to choose one, who would it be and why? To be fair, it could be like choose one to wash the dishes. Like it doesn't actually say what for. But I'm assuming it's because it's a football podcast. It's to put in the football term.
I choose Saka. I try to respect that consistent churn over the last couple of years. I try not to forget that. I make a point of that.
That's fair, George.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to take both, wouldn't you?
That's not the question.
But I'm saying I'd love to take Phil Foden, but I would take Saka over Foden.
I am going to have to go against the grain here. I'm going to have to pick Foden just because purely on vibes, he's my pure favourite player to watch in the Premier League.
Let me know when Foden's got his own Nando's sauce and I might consider picking
that. That is true. But he doesn't strike me as a spicy sauce kind of guy.
No.
Foden, no, doesn't strike me as that.
What does he strike you as?
He'd get his own energy drink.
Oh yeah, that's my kind of guy. Yeah, so. I can go along with that. I think he'd be a mild. I don't really do Nando, so I don't really know the sauce things. Mild is that one? I think he'd be mild.
Lemon and herb.
Is that lemon, is that mild?
What's the vegetarian Nando's like?
Actually, good. They're very good.
You had a KFC last night. You said it's terrible. And you said you go to Nando's.
I don't get to make these kind of decisions. Girlfriends, children get to make the decisions of their food when moving house, and I did not get a say. I of course had to go and get it though. So you know, I had that job. Right then, let's move away from Foden, Saka, Nando's, KFC, and whatnot. Let's talk about Manchester City and their goalkeeping situation. So, Edison out. We've seen with Liverpool, obviously they've been playing with their second choice goalkeeper for a period recently. It's going to happen to Manchester City now as well. How deeply will that affect them? Because I can see that Ortega is very, very, very adept with his feet. Mm. I actually think he's really good at one-on-ones as well.
Ortega's seems really good, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got a really interesting technique.
It's weird. Yeah, it's like...
this will be a loss.
Did you think he was this good? No, not really. Did you think Kelleher was this good? Definitely not.
I did actually with Kelleher. I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like Kelleher a lot.
Oh, good for you.
I think if you grew your hair, you could have a bit of Kelleher vibes.
Okay.
Got your
I'm not, yeah. All right, yeah, fine.
Actually, you have to grow your hair. It's probably a similar length to Keller. Get rid of the beard and you'll look like Keller.
I will put on a black Liverpool goalkeeping kit and some gloves and then we'll have a look and
or
see.
Or just take a picture of Keller to your local barber and just be like, this, please.
This is what I want.
That would be, so that happens, remember, people are like, oh, I want the Grealish, I want the Beckham. Yeah. No one's ever said, I love the Keller.
I think I've said on this podcast before, I saw him in central London, must have been
a day,
and he just looked like a normal bloke. You know, footballers, sometimes they got like aura about them. He just looked like a normal bloke, but I spotted him and thought, that's Keller.
That's
I didn't
Keller.
Know anything about it, but yeah, but he just looks like
anyway,
a normal bloke.
Ortega.
Yeah, come on.
He's pretty good. He's probably a little bit better than I thought he was. Although, I mean, it's always difficult to tell, isn't it? Because a backup goalkeeper gets such a small sample size to play with most of the time. And so it is only in these kind of situations where, you know, he steps in at Anfield and then he plays the game against Newcastle where he just looks really quite assured the whole time. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. But it's still a small sample size. So you're still just a tiny bit wary. I guess if the question is like, will it cost them here? I go back to the last meeting between these two teams and they were like, it was not a lot of shots on target. There was two shots on target the last time these two teams met. It was, remember, the 1-0 Arsenal scored a very deflected late goal from Martinelli after the game kind of broke open. City didn't manage a shot on target. They were really quite poor. And the goalkeepers did not really play a part in that game from a shot stopping perspective because nothing really happened. You know, the two teams were so strong defensively. Saliba cancelled out Erling Haaland, and at the other end, City did their business. And it's almost like a goalkeeper might as well have not have played. Mm. So if it's anything like that, where the two teams just nullify each other, then actually I don't think who's in goal will have that big an effect.
No.
But I guess maybe the argument here is that Edison's sort of long kicking and stuff like that is probably the best in the league. And occasionally City can just go bang, 60, 70 yards. Remember when Edison used to just free Raheem Sterling over the top and he's gone. See you later. If that is the sort of thing that can crack open a tight game, then that's where they're going to miss him the most. I don't necessarily think from a shot stopping perspective and sort of like the meat and veg version of a goalkeeper, that this is going to be a problem for them.
Okay, interesting. Who do you think will be playing in this game? Who do you think is top of the form rankings currently? Last six appearances, who do you think is top of the Who Scored form rankings?
All positions?
All positions, yeah. It's not a goalkeeper. I'll give you that clue.
Odegaard.
Nobody is fourth. George?
Havertz
is second.
No!
We're going to talk about him shortly. It's an all Arsenal top four. It's actually Declan Rice.
Oh, of course it is.
Across the entirety of the Premier League at the moment, which speaks to how good Arsenal are at the moment, they've got the top four players in the Who Scored form rankings. So we've got Declan Rice top with 8.15. Then we've got Kai Havertz with 8.07. Saka's third with 8.01. Odegaard 7.92 in fourth. Fantasy football hero Rodrigo Muniz is 7.70. He's in fifth. We've then got sixth Cole Palmer, seventh Alexis McAllister, eighth Gabriel Martinelli, which has surprised me, ninth Phil Foden, and 10th Bruno Fernandes, which I am not having at all. George, we're going to talk about the man who is number two. We're talking about Kai Havertz, now playing number nine for Arsenal in probably their best period of the season. This is where we're all looking at Arsenal now and thinking, boy, these are serious. And that time has come with Kai Havertz playing as a number nine. What have you made of his evolution of his time at Arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I love it when players like Havertz, who are much maligned, where people criticise the transfer.
I think we might have had a pop at him on this show at one point, I'm pretty sure.
Show me my pop, Dan. I don't think I did.
I've had a pop at him this season.
Well, yeah,
but it just felt very weird that he was brought in for the amount of money that he was brought in for and then was basically played in Granit Xhaka's position, which had been vacated by him in the summer, where their skill sets, their style of play, where they impact games are just like completely different. You know, if you want to find the radars for those two players for a central midfield position of Xhaka last season and Havertz for the first half of this season, I'm pretty sure they'd be at odds with each other. You know, Xhaka's somebody who's so good in terms of ball progression. Everything goes through him, obviously very energetic. Havertz, someone who you know, thrives, I think, picking up the ball in advanced areas and in pockets of space and exploiting that and a massive goal threat. So it's not a huge surprise to me that since he's been played through the middle up front with two kind of inside forwards either side of him, enabling him to still drop in, it's been where he succeeded. He scored four goals in his last six games. He's looked really, really good in possession in terms of linking up play. And he's just way better suited to this. My only concern is I still think with Kai Havertz, yes, he's having a period now where he's playing well through the middle. But you know, he's someone who scored a goal in the Champions League final. He's someone who's made two massive moves for big money. But at 24 years old, I'm not entirely sure where his future lies in terms positionally. Like, I don't think he's going to be a striker for the rest of his career, or at least a number nine. I think ideally he'd want to play in a 4-2-3-1 as the player behind the striker. But we know that that's not the way that Arsenal want to play. So he's incredibly talented and, you know, I think when Arteta and Arsenal moved to bring him in, the idea was, how do we take this player that's been kind of misused for the last couple of seasons and maximise his impact in games? And I think they bungled that for the first half of the season, but now they're kind of getting there. And he'll play a big part from now to the end of the season and a big part in the game on Sunday.
He's one of those players that he thinks he's best in one area of the pitch or one thing, and all of the evidence suggests something else. And often it can be very hard to convince players that they're wrong about their own skill set. I've seen it a number of times, especially with midfielders who think they're one thing, but they're actually another. And like, Dan, I'll give you an example of Douglas Luiz, who was pretty sure he was a box-to-box midfielder until eventually he accepted that not really. He's more of a deep-lying player and a string puller. And actually, that's where you can get the best out of him. Not as like a full-on athletic box-to-box player.
No, box-to-box, yeah.
And it was the case with Adrian Rabiot for a long time as well. Like, he thought that he was this incredible box-to-box player. And he was always better as a holder as well. It always happens with midfielders. And Kai Havertz thinks he's a 10. And he's done an interview with The Athletic where he's like, I know my best position. I want to be between the lines. I want to be jumping on those second balls. I want to be playing just off the forward. All the Premier League evidence that we have suggests that that's not the case. In the Bundesliga, that was the case. But in England, he has been best as a 9. And you know, the first game he played for Arsenal was as a 9.
Yeah, I remember.
Community Shield. Yeah. He was really good.
Yeah,
he missed a couple of chances, didn't he? But he was good that day. I guess the difference with being a false nine at Arsenal, and because essentially he's still doing a lot of the things that a number 10 does, because that the way Arsenal play enables him to do that. I guess when you've got Martinelli and Saka either side of you, who just literally are so direct, that's different to being a false nine at Chelsea. So it's being more effective. And I also think that, you know, Arteta deserves some credit here because he obviously bought him with the Xhaka role in mind, yeah. Realised it wasn't going to work and has changed it. Managers can be stubborn sometimes and keep wheeling out the same thing. I think George Arteta deserves credit for realising this. And it's a big decision to leave out Jesus for Havertz week in, week out, which he is at the moment. I think it's a brave call.
But it's not, I mean, it was a brave call then. It's not a brave call now. I mean, when you've got Havertz in the form that he's in.
You have to tell Jesus every week, you know, he was bought for a lot of money, who came from Manchester City because he was not happy with the amount of how many games he was playing, that you're...
But that's no reason. And also, like, they're, you know, we are in a game where you have to talk about football every week and what's going on, but it's all so cyclical as well. Like, Gabriel Jesus is in a period right now where he's not playing particularly well. I think we've seen enough of Gabriel Jesus to suggest that he's probably not going to be a player who's going to start every game up front over a season and maintain a level of form. Like he plays well in bursts. He scores.
He's too injury prone to maintain
exactly,
anything like that.
Exactly. And he scores some goals, but he's not particularly prolific. Like he's a very good player, but there's no way that he's someone who's going to start up front for Arsenal consistently. Like they need to bring in a new striker and I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they will in the summer. But now like on the evidence we have to hand of those two players playing up front for Arsenal right now, I'd say it's a pretty easy decision for Arteta to make, even if Jesus' reputation in that role might have eclipsed Havertz's to this day.
Yeah. If this was Football Manager, Dan, if this was Football Manager and you're the manager and Gabriel Jesus came to you and said, I'm not playing enough, which of the buttons do you select? It's the one that says, the team's in really good form right now, I'm not going to mess with it.
Yeah, I'll start you in the Cups.
Yeah, that's it.
And Arsenal can't do that, I suppose.
Well, they can start him in the Champions League, but they won't, because it will be because it's the business end of the Champions League, so that won't happen either. But at the moment, Arsenal look fantastic. As an entire unit, they look brilliant. Why would you change that? And that's such an easy thing to say to Jesus at the moment. The difficulty comes in the summer when he's like, "Well, are you going to go and sign Victor Osimhen and push me down to third in the pecking order? You know what happens then?" But that's 2 months away. You know, Arsenal have got trophies to win between then and now.
But he will have to change it. You know, he's not going to be able to wheel out the same 11 week in, week out. He's going to have to make a couple of subtle changes, especially if that's with the Champions League coming up as well. When is that back? Is it next week?
Almost immediately, yeah.
Is it next week? Yeah. Some juicy games in there. I need to get my TV across to my new place. I've got Sky installed, but don't have the internet at the moment and don't have the TV. So I need to get that sorted ASAP for the Champions League next week.
I've managed, when we moved into our place, there's a cellar, which I want to turn into my like studio and have a TV in there. And when we installed Sky, I put Sky down there. And obviously, I literally haven't been down there since. It's full of storage. There's just a skybox just sitting in my cellar that I'm paying 13 quid a month for that I now just don't know what to do about it.
So, £13 a month?
For an extra box, because there's a box upstairs. Cool. I got the extra box downstairs.
You're still watching Sky, just not in your lair.
Yeah, exactly.
George's lair. The George Ellick wardrobe, as I like to call it. Someone I wasn't particularly expecting to be talking about today, in some ways I've not forgotten that he was there, but I haven't, just don't feel like I've seen very much of him, is Mateo Kovacic, sir. Have you found his first season at Manchester City? He's only made 10 starts and he's made 10 appearances from the bench as well. He's only started one game against the top six, and that was Arsenal in September, where they lost and he really possibly could have been sent off. Feels like Pep, he doesn't have Pep's full trust, but we hear about Pep and trust with a lot of players. The Kovacic one's kind of gone under the radar, hasn't it?
So I think there's a bit of the Gabriel Jesus here in that first of all, Mateo Kovacic has never stayed fit. And so if you can't stay fit, you can't stay consistent, you can't get momentum. And then if you're trying to crack this Man City team, the treble winners, the reigning European champions, and you can't string together 2 months worth of fitness, then it's going to be very difficult for you to get into that midfield with Rodri and John Stones in there. So 10 starts, 10 sub appearances at the world's best team. When you're missing games, one in every three or four, if you look through on Transfermarkt, you can see very easily like the...
We don't look at other websites here, Sam. We only look at who scored.
You can see very clearly see like where he's been marked in and out of squads. And it's just like one in every four, he's just out. He's out of the squad. Could be injury, could just be out of the squad, whatever. How are you supposed to crack this Man City team if you're in that situation fitness-wise? So I think 10 starts, 10 sub-appearances is very fair for a player in his first season under Pep. You know, new signings usually take a bit of time. Doku is the exception to the rule. But even Grealish needed a season. And
it feels like the opinion of Doku from non Manchester City fans and Manchester City fans is quite different.
Yes.
Like if you look at the reaction of City fans when Doku's in the starting lineup when he comes off the bench, it's not one of excitement. Let's just put it that way.
They want Grealish back there, don't they?
Have you had your rant on Doku yet, Dan?
My rant?
Yeah, you.
Did I say I was going to do one?
No, you just don't think he's very good, do you? And you were like, I'm going to save that for another pod.
I did a pod in the summer about realistic signings for Villa with James Alcott. And I actually, he was someone I put in there as someone that I wouldn't mind Villa.
So that's why you take a
look at. No, I think he's a brilliant player, and he started really well. But I just think Manchester City are a better team with Grealish. It's as simple as that, really. Especially in the big games. That's not Grealish bias from me. I think if you just look at the numbers and the control that Grealish offers, and you've just said, if you speak to Manchester City fans, if they're picking their best 11, they're all putting Grealish in there. Yeah. They want him back. So that tells me everything.
With Kovacic, there's also, it reminds me a little bit of watching Kovacic playing last season for Chelsea and then watching him playing in Qatar for Croatia, where at Chelsea he was the player that they would get the ball into feet for, who would create, who would drive with the ball, who would, you know, if Jorginho was the one who was knitting play together until he left in January, Kovacic was kind of the one that would make things happen. And then you watch him play for Croatia, where it was Brozovic was the holding player, so the player who was, you know, effectively winning the ball back and distributing. Modric was the mercurial ball player, and it kind of felt like Kovacic's role was just to run around, which was not really suiting his, you know, he is obviously very energetic and he gets stuck in, but you've got a mercurial talent there who's not really doing those. And it kind of feels like that at City, where he's sometimes like shoehorned in next to Rodri, but realistically Rodri's going to be the distributor from deep. You've got De Bruyne, who's going to be the player they're going to try and get the ball to wherever possible. So again, it doesn't really feel like Kovacic, who's so good at carrying the ball through the thirds, who's, I think, a really underrated passer, both in terms of retention and also creation. But I'm not really sure what his role is. Like, I think he's probably best to be Rodri's, you know, understudy when Rodri comes out for injury or suspension. Or
but
whatever.
Rodri never misses games, really. He misses like four in a year. Exactly. They lose all four, for what it's worth. But he doesn't really miss games. I mean, look, I think, to round off the conversation on Kovacic, because he doesn't play that much, but he does bring an element of control that even Manchester City can sometimes lack. So he can step off the bench for 15 minutes and he can retain the ball in a way that actually even that super team sometimes do struggle with when in the flow of the game. But that's about it, you know, and it's not that dissimilar really to what you're talking about, Dan, with Grealish. His ball retention in the final third is really good. Kovacic's ball retention in the middle third is amazing. If City need to grab hold of a game again, they will probably end up sending Kovacic on, thinking he'll get us the control that we're currently lacking. It's a really valuable tool to have if you're City. It's a big luxury to have, actually, on the bench, a player like him.
I mean, we've gone way too long on this game. I think we've only got about 20 minutes left that we can physically do. Got to talk about the international break, though. So City have seen Walker, Akanji and Stones pick up knocks on the international break, George. Arsenal, on the other hand, had Saka, Gabriel and Martinelli withdraw from squad. I suppose Declan Rice played 90 minutes. Rodri had a little bit of a rest for Spain.
Rice played 180 minutes, didn't he? What did I just say? 90.
I didn't mean that. I meant what you said. Thank you. No, I did.
Yeah, but Rice is the Terminator. He just goes.
How much do you put... I always think, like Rice hasn't had to travel anywhere. I think travel's a big part of international duty. Rice has been in London or St. George's Park for the whole time. But how much do you put on those kind of things going into this huge game, George?
I mean, the injuries to City are obviously
bad.
really not ideal. I think when you take out Walker and Stones from that defence, it's going to look very different. And especially against, you probably wouldn't worry too much if Sunday's game is a home game against a side in the bottom half of the table. But against Arsenal, there's nowhere really to hide here. So that's significant. In terms of Arsenal, it's kind of impossible to say until we see the team on Sunday. Like, we assume that those players will be okay. I'm not sure it reflects brilliantly on, Bukayo Saka if he's in the starting lineup on Sunday.
He will, but...
I know, but I mean, it's not great if we're honest.
He did go though, didn't he? And the medical staff would have looked at him. Yeah, but England medical staff would have made that decision with him.
Or did he knock on Gareth's door and say, "Hi, Gareth, do you mind if I have a couple of weeks off, please?"
I don't think it was that. On the City injuries, by the way, Akanji, right, has been added to this list as well.
Yeah.
Also significant, just because, first of all, if Walker's not there, then they would probably expect Akanji to step in.
Yeah.
And also, if Stones isn't there to play the hybrid centre-back defensive midfield role, they've tended to turn to Akanji for that.
Hmm.
So hang on, the guy that you would pick literally next in line for Stones or Walker is also out. All three of them.
So what are we looking at for a City? Let's say they're both out. What are we looking at? Rico Lewis right back?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, maybe, yeah.
I can't see what else they do. Rico Lewis, Diaz, Ake, Guardiol. I can't. There's no one else either. Am I missing someone?
They're not
the biggest squad in the world. I know it sounds stupid, but they don't have depth. It's just quality, quality.
They've been running with the 18, 19 players for 2 years.
Mm.
And they've been kind of getting away with it to a point. A bit of a concern. I mean, that might mean that Kovacic ends up stepping into midfield, because this is the sort of situation where he can actually offer real value.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a combined 11 here, and Akanji's actually in it, because I think when the combined 11 was put together, didn't know that he was going to be unavailable or potentially unavailable. So I'll say Walker and Stones don't make it. I assume that's because of being excluded due to being unavailable. What do you think the spread is of Arsenal and Manchester City, George?
6-5.
Is this season long?
Yes.
Must be. In favour of Arsenal, that is, by the way.
Oh, no. Then I'll just go 6-5 in favour of City.
No, 7-4 to Arsenal.
Oh. Yes!
But this must be the goalkeeper's David Raya. I mean, obviously, I think it has to be because Edison's unavailable. The lowest
I thought it would still be Onana, even though he's not even part of the team.
I mean, yeah, Onana gets it. Fernandez, Onana, absolute nonsense. Raya, 6.57. I think that's the lowest number I've seen in a combined 11 in all the years I've...
That's harsh on goalies, though, isn't it, this stuff?
Yeah.
Who scored out?
Really.
They just have a penalty or something, doesn't it? Or get an assist. That'll get the numbers up. We've got Ben White at right-back, Akanji and Gabriel centre-back, which surprises me because no Saliba. Zinchenko, left-back. Rodri, who hasn't lost a football match for a year for Manchester City, is ridiculous, 7.56. Odegaard and Rice ahead of him. And then Saka, Haaland and Foden is the front three. Brilliant 11. Unbelievable.
The fun thing about Rodri's last loss, I was there.
Who was it against?
Tottenham away.
Okay.
Yeah, it was part of that. It was the 1-0. It was February last year. So just over, I mean, it's early February. So I think we're genuinely approaching 14 months now since he lost the game. And I was there to witness it. I remember rocking up to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It was my first time I was watching Erling Haaland in the flesh. I was so excited. And he and everybody else at City were basically useless.
Well, will Rodri continue that record this weekend? What are your score predictions, Sam?
I've been spooked by the City injuries, but I've bottled the Arsenal win. I'm going to go for 1-1.
That's exactly what I've done. I've gone for 1-1.
That's exactly what I've done.
We've all gone for 1-1, and that's good. Let's keep some consistency, because
good for Dan Bardell.
There wasn't many games, was there? Last time we did a show, I think it was only there was only the 5 games, wasn't there, across the Premier League weekend? We all got 3 points. Rubbish. But we all got 3 points. So I stay on 172 top. Sam and Jonathan closely behind with 169. And then George, embarrassingly, 143.
It's not over yet.
It's not over. There is still time left.
10 perfect scores here, George, and you're back in the running.
Yeah.
10 perfect scores and I go ahead, don't I?
If you got 10 perfect scores, I think, yeah, you would go ahead, because I wouldn't think that I'd do that.
That would be...
Let's take a... Let's take a little break then and just do the rest of our predictions then, apart from Villa Wolves, which we're going to come on to. So Newcastle United against West Ham, George.
3-1 Newcastle.
3-1 to Newcastle. I've gone for 2-0 to Newcastle, Sam.
2-1 to Newcastle.
2-1 to Newcastle. Newcastle, West Ham, of course, kind of an obscure Marlon Harewood derby, because he did have a brief spell on loan.
Jesus.
At Newcastle, so yeah, Marlon Harewood derby this week. Bournemouth v Everton, Sam.
2-1 to Bournemouth.
Exactly the same for me. George?
The Josh King derby, 1-1.
Oh, love that. Love nice. That, George. Chelsea v Burnley, George.
Trying to think of what derby this is. 3-1 to Chelsea.
It would be the Fofana derby, but he won't be able to play. I've gone for 3-0 to Chelsea. Sam?
2-0 to Chelsea.
2-0 to Chelsea. Forest against Palace. Huge game, Sam.
It is. I've got a Desmond here. 2-2.
2-2. I've gone for 2-1 to Crystal Palace. Don't know why. I don't remember doing that, but I have done that. So that's the way it is, George.
Dougie Freeburn derby, 1-1.
Oh, I love this, George. Sheffield United against Fulham. I can picture him. Is it the Norwood derby?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
George, what have you gone for?
2-0 Fulham.
Same for me, 2-0 to Fulham. Sam?
Yeah, I've got a funny feeling here. I went for 1-1.
1-1, that is a funny feeling. Yeah, you won't want to be getting too many of those for those funny feelings again. Spurs against Luton, Sam?
Andros Townsend derby.
3-1 to Spurs.
Bloody hell. Same for me. George?
Same.
3-1. We've all got for 3-1. We'll talk about Villa Wolves shortly. Brentford against Manchester United, George.
The Christian Eriksen derby.
Eriksen, yeah. 1-1.
1-1. I've gone for 3-1 to Manchester United.
Yeah, 1-1.
1-1 as well. Okay. Liverpool against Brighton. Adam Lallana will go for that one, Sam.
Alexis McAllister. 2-0 to Liverpool.
2-0 to Liverpool. I've gone 3-1 to Liverpool. George?
I have gone for 3-1 to Liverpool as well. Frustrating this.
And then, of course, we've already done City against Arsenal. Let's play a little bit of Manchester United shots against bingo then. Brentford v Manchester United this weekend. Shots against, what are you going for, George?
A bit fewer than we've had seen recently. I'm going to go for 16.
16?
Yeah.
I was, Sam?
Good day at the office for United.
So it's actually my first time playing this game.
The second time we've ever done it.
Oh, okay. I've gone for 19, thinking that was low.
19. I got lucky last round of shots bingo because it went to extra time. And so, because it
doesn't
went to extra
count.
Time.
90 minute mark,
it always counts. 25 shots against, I was correct with. What did you go for, sorry, George?
I can't remember now.
16, you said.
No, 16 this time, yeah.
Yeah, 16. Sam, what was yours?
19.
I'm going to go for 15.
What, are you deciding right now?
Well, hold on.
You decided yours right now?
You just undercut me, because that means if there's anything below 16, you just win.
Well, what do you want me to do? No one wins unless you get it bang on. We've all just got to pick. Right, we've okay. got to pick. We've
you also win play. Nothing, right?
I'm getting accused of making that up on the spot. We all just did that.
No, I did mine yesterday.
He did loads of research. Show us your notes.
He did loads of research. It just is his first time playing the game. Like he didn't know it was coming.
No, I knew it was coming. I did it. I wrote 19 on a piece of paper yesterday.
Okay. Well, moving forward, we'll do it like that. We'll do it like that moving forward. Let's hope Brentford do bloody win anyway, just because Aston Villa are playing Wolves, which has not been Villa haven't won in six, Sam, against Wolves. I think they're the only Premier League team currently that Unai Emery hasn't beat as well, both in his time at Arsenal and Villa. I'm sure I saw that yesterday. So I'm not looking forward to this game. I've got to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, it's never fun, is it? No. It hasn't been. Home or away, it's never fun.
Unless it's COVID and we get a 90th minute penalty. There's not been much to enjoy.
Yeah, that was great. So, correct if I'm wrong, last year, home to Wolves, Leon Bailey misses a one-on-one in the dying seconds and
cries and beats the
turf. Like, the frustration levels surrounding this game of football for Villa are remarkable. And, you know, I'm tempted to say it's not representative of the quality between the two sides, but it kind of is. Like, Wolves are a really good team and have been for a while now, and it's no wonder that they can consistently get the better of or stymie Villa. But I do have a strangely good feeling about this one from Villa's perspective.
I mean, I'll do a spoiler. I have predicted Villa to win because I'm never going to do anything. I've just realized my light's not on. No, it's still not on. That's why I look a bit funny today on the camera. I predicted Villa to win, but I actually deep down don't think that they will.
You don't believe in it. So, no. Villa, where's the hope coming from? I think it's because Pedro Neto is injured. And,
Wang is out as well, isn't there?
Wang out, yes.
Is Cunha out? No.
Cunha is training, but he's been out for a month, and they've got 3 games in 10 days now. Obviously, all the teams have got a lot to crack on with. And I just don't, you're not going to see Cunha for more than 45 minutes, I would argue.
I don't want to see him. I would argue here.
So all of the really direct ball-carrying, counter-attacking threats here for Wolves are kind of injured. And that's what really has been Villa's Achilles heel, right?
Yeah.
Neto steaming down the wing at Molineux earlier in the season was a huge, huge problem. And not just for Villa, for a lot of clubs this season.
Yeah, I was at that game.
He's absolutely phenomenal. And obviously, Cunha's sort of the ability to take the ball on halfway and just drive 40 yards with it, it does send teams into a bit of a spiral. So if that counter-attacking threat is lacking its punch and lacking its effectiveness, Villa might be able to keep a lid on this game a little bit better than they usually would. And that territory and that possession may lead itself to what I'm going to also predict is a win, not to tip the hand too early.
No. I mean, they're off the back of a really, I would imagine, a morale-damaging defeat as well. Wolves, George losing to Coventry in the FA Cup, my favourite game of the season. That's not me being biased against Wolves. I just really, really enjoyed that game. Wolves have scored my favourite Premier League goal.
I called it as well, didn't I? We did our FA Cup prediction.
Yeah, you did call that. So that's, you imagine that's going to play a part, because that must have damaged morale, surely. Fingers crossed.
I really think he can go either way. That, it's not ideal to be 2-1 up against a Championship side and concede twice in injury time, to be knocked out of the FA Cup in the quarterfinals. Not great.
But can't really spin that, can you?
I don't necessarily think it's going to mean they're going to come into this game against Villa being like, oh no, that was awful, it's going to happen again.
They always get themselves up for this one. I don't know why. Well, it doesn't matter what they're doing for form. They always seem to be top of the game for this one.
The amateur psychologist in me would say that maybe they'll come into this with a bit of a point to prove after that, and actually they need to kind of right the wrongs from that game rather than, it can go anyway. Realistically, it may not have any bearing on the game whatsoever, especially because it happened nearly 2 weeks ago. So, we'll see. It does mean that there isn't an FA Cup semi-final in a couple of weeks for players to preserve themselves for or to be distracted by, potentially. This is a game between two teams who aren't aren't best friends, and I guess in that sense both teams should be fairly up for it, and both sets of fans will be too. It should be a good game from that respect, and two teams who probably really need 3 points to get their season kind of back on track.
Yeah, Dawson always turns into prime Yapster.
He does,
as well, which is, I always find quite annoying.
Does every week.
When do you think was the last time Villa beat Wolves at Villa Park? Do either of you remember the game? Obviously, Sam's a Villa fan like me, but George, covering the EFL, I would imagine there's a chance you'd remember this game as well.
I do remember that one. Now that you said EFL.
That 17-18 season.
It was the 4-1, wasn't it?
The 4-1, yeah.
Like Grealish.
Wolves got promoted, Villa didn't, but Villa won 4-1 at home.
I mean, Ruben Neves had one of the worst games of his career that day. He got absolutely hammered by Grealish's dribbling and John McGinn's bum.
How do I forget?
No. John McGinn wasn't playing.
Oh, was he not playing? McGinn,
it would have been Yedin, at Grealish and Harahan.
Oh yeah, the big three. Yeah,
that would have been it that day. But I mean, that was a brilliant game. A brilliant game at Villa Park. That was
Dan's confidence is on the floor here. It was just that was a brilliant game. Well, I love that game.
Harping back to why we can't
just sit down and rather than going to the game or putting it on the TV, just put that game.
If I feel like this, I don't know. Really well, I will. I'm stupid. I've never missed a game because I don't feel very well. But I just don't like this game as a Villa fan. I just don't like it because we never seem to turn up, and there's worries in the midfield. Sam, that's the problem. It's probably going to be Tielemans and Louise as a two. We've got no McGinn.
Tielemans fresh off his brace against Wembley.
And the goal scoring midfielder, but in that two, I don't think he'll be able to maraud into the box. That was Lukaku's pass, by the way. That cross was absolutely incredible against England the other night. But they're up against someone who made their Brazil debut recently in João Gomes as well, and he got picked over Douglas Luiz, which surprised me. George, Sam, I meant to say Sam there. Sam, you any idea why?
No. No, I don't. I mean, I thought it was a very foully debut from João Gomes.
That's what he's good at.
He and Lucas Paqueta must have had some pre-match chat and gone, right, minimum 10 fouls between us, lads. Like, we are going for it. Because a lot was made of England's performance, you know, from an attacking perspective against Brazil. And my argument for the whole thing is, well, we have absolutely no idea how good or bad we could have been. Because every time we looked like we might do something, Lucas Paqueta or João Gomes just fouled us. And we never even got going. And in an actual competitive game, they'd have both been sent off. So it wouldn't, and we'd have actually got to see what would have happened. So yeah, my sort of takeaway from his glorious debut for his country was he committed a lot of fouls and kind of ruined the experience for me. And you know what? It's very likely that he does the same thing on Saturday. He's had a good season, a nice all-action midfielder. And I do worry about the physicality of Wolves' midfield compared to Villa's midfield of, you know, Luiz and Tielemans, who are both, you know, 5'9" fellas with short legs. And it will be probably 2v3 and it will be difficult for them. You know, losing Boubacar Camara in their problem. Standing John McGinn also missing, suspended, big problem. Also losing McGinn at corners. Remember at Molineux, McGinn spent his entire game just trying to annoy Craig Dawson. Yeah. He just spent like being the biggest nuisance possible to level the battle at set pieces. He can't be there to do that this time. How's that going to affect not only the midfield battle, but the set pieces? This is a big problem. So yeah, Villa's central midfield until next week is a huge worry, basically, until John McGinn can step back in from suspension.
Yeah, Jacob Ramsey potentially. I mean, he won't play central mid.
He'd play left, wouldn't he? And yeah, Tim, but, you know, Tim will be fit, but does Tim have the trust?
No. Doesn't seem to. I was going to say something then based off the back. Oh, Zaniola. No start for him after his goal at West Ham.
In centre mid? No way. And
not in centre. No, not in centre mid. Do you think I know nothing about football? Do you think that? I'm just asking whether he might play.
Doesn't seem to have the trust of Emery either, does he?
Okay.
George, I mean, he doesn't, does he?
No. But he scored the other week and made an impact, so you think maybe he might come in for a start. George, because you're the, you know, obviously me and Sam, very, very biased in this conversation. How do you, I'm interested in how you see this game.
Do my prediction?
Well, you can give us the prediction, but I'd also like to colour around that if you can.
I've gone for Villa to win it 2-1. I think it's going to be probably an entertaining game for the neutral. As you say, some quite combative midfielders, probably fairly stop-start. But two teams that have seen a lot of goals this season as well. And I think Villa's home form over the course of the campaign has been so strong. And I think, you know, realistically, even despite the injuries, they should have the better of the game. But I mean, I love watching Wolves. I think
I do as well. I think Gary O'Neill's done a tremendous job.
Unbelievable job. They've
been really good this season. They've been a great one. I've watched them a lot of times, actually. I've always enjoyed them when I've watched them.
And just great individuals to watch as well. Like, when Neto's fit, of course, but Sarabia as well is a brilliant pair to watch. Cunha's amazing.
Ain't Nori very entertaining as well.
It'll be a good one, but I do see Villa just about coming out on top.
He's even made a defender out of Semedo. He's kind of got the balance right with Semedo. Gary O'Neill. Gary O'Neill's up there as manager of the season.
The best Gary O'Neill fact for the week
that he's been linked with the Manchester United job
is that he features in the US office.
Does it? That's my favourite programme. Where?
So, yeah, it's very, very niche. It's the episode where Idris Elba, who plays Charles, I think, right? He steps in from court.
Charles Minor
comes and manages the branch for a spell. And it's that episode where they all pretend to love soccer because he loves soccer and they're all kissing up to him. And Andy Bernard changes his desktop background on his computer to a picture of a Man United player taking a free kick against Middlesbrough. And in the Middlesbrough wall is Gary O'Neill.
That's unbelievable. That is what a way to end the pod. I mean, I didn't need to get fans' prediction, but...
He's given me a lift home from Sky before. There's my fact. Dan, what have you got?
Oh my God, I've got nothing on Gary O'Neill.
Wow.
It's not really on Gary O'Neill, is that I, in the summer at Sky, questioned Wolves' season, the fact that they'd hired him. And I thought I predicted them to get relegated, did a 10-minute piece on why Wolves were going to go down. And every week, I get battered on every time Wolves win a game. Quote tweets from Wolves fans, and I get absolutely annihilated on Twitter. But recently, a few Wolves fans have actually come to my defence and said, "Well, actually, that's what we were all saying."
Yeah, everyone said it. Right. Everyone said it. My prediction is 3-1 to Villa before we
go on.
Derail completely and forget that 3-1. So it is slightly different, thankfully.
Just to on the Gary O'Neill lift home, George. I like stuff like that. Did he live near you?
So I was living in Walthamstow at the time. He lives, I think, in Essex. So it was just around the North Circular, and he could just drop me off. He didn't drop me off at home. He dropped me off near home, which actually took me back
at a petrol station.
He could have said, "Did you pay him any gas money?"
No. We had a good chat as well. It was just before he went and started working in Liverpool. He's a lovely bloke. I think if you had told me during that car journey that fast forward a couple of years, he'd be getting linked to the job he's getting linked to, I probably would have been quite surprised. Yeah. But
yeah. No, good manager. Tremendous manager. Got a good season, Wolves. Well done to them. But let's not have anything silly at the weekend, Wolves. Let's have a bad reaction to the Coventry defeat. That's what everyone wants to see. Right then, that does us for this week's edition of the Edge of the Box podcast by WhoScored.com in association with Ultimate Fan. I'm running out of breath. I haven't got the capacity to be doing that in the way that I just did it. But thanks ever so much to everyone that's watched, listened. Don't forget to tell all your friends and family about the podcast and do all those things that help us, like subscribing, liking and commenting. Go on, give some social media chat as well. Let's try and get the numbers up on the show. Been a pleasure to converse with both of you. We'll be back again next week for another Premier League preview. So have a great weekend and enjoy all the football.